We can't enter into the spiritual world, walk around morose, and everyone's wondering, how did you get here? What's wrong with you? You know, no one has a bad day in the spiritual world. So similarly, if we're going to enter into the transcendental platform of consciousness, we also have to become joyful. So most of our anxiety is due to imagination. Just as we can enter into Krishna consciousness, it's if we use our imagination properly. So we're in Maya mostly because of our imagination. Most of the things we're anxiety about don't even exist except in our own imagination. They didn't give me enough prasadam today. I got served third instead of second. You know, no one appreciated how nice I was. Someone stepped on my foot. They didn't even apologize. You know, so most of what our anxiety is all imagination. So if we can give that up and chant joyfully, or at least feelingly, then the result is that automatically Krishna's form will come into being. Because what else can we, should we remember? If you chant, as I used to give the example, I don't always give it anymore, but Mickey Mouse. Everyone here has heard of Mickey Mouse, of course. So there used to be a Mickey Mouse fan club when I grew up. And that was one of the favorite television programs for all the children. So that was the first mantra I ever learned, the Mickey Mouse mantra. MICKEYMOUSE, Mickey Mouse. And then their refrain was the other side, because it was a competition like Chandravali and Radharani. There was a Donald Duck side also. So someone would chant Mickey Mouse and the other side would chant Donald Duck. So what happens when you chant MICKEYMOUSE, besides learning spelling, you start remembering a duck and a mouse. So if we can remember the form of a mouse, big ears and a big nose, blackish type of body with a big tail, and his confidential associates like Minnie Mouse and Goofy. If we can remember these things when we chant this mantra, but it's not exactly mantra, whatever it is, then if we chant the Hare Krishna mantra attentively and enthusiastically, at least as enthusiastic as the five-year-old children who are chanting Mickey Mouse without any inhibition, then the result is that naturally we remember Krishna's form, at least that. And when one has practiced to remember Krishna's form, then one will actually begin to understand, Krishna will give the intelligence, how to feel Krishna's presence. And that feeling of Krishna's presence is ruchi, the qualities of Krishna. One will actually experience some transcendental taste, and one will be able to understand that this is actually purifying. This is what it means to become Krishna conscious. And then by some more practice, as one is spontaneously able to feel Krishna's presence, then what happens is that the material nature, our material consciousness diminishes, and it becomes very easy just to spontaneously start remembering Krishna's pastimes. It just flows automatically. Because the mind, that's the way the mind works. In the material world, the mind works due to association. Like you may see a color like green, and then you remember something like, you know, my favorite food when I was a kid was, you know, green pudding. And then you may remember, you know, I was eating green pudding and my dog came up and, you know, and licked the table. And I like dog. And, you know, in this way the mind, due to association, just starts remembering so many different things. So similarly, after remembering Krishna's form and feeling Krishna's presence, then spontaneously the mind will start remembering things in relationship to Krishna. No, this is green, and Ramachandra is green, and Ramachandra had Sita, and they were banished to the forest, and while in the forest, Ravana came. So the mind is due to association. So it's working spontaneously, remembering Krishna's pastimes. And what are Krishna's pastimes? They're nothing but the exchanges between love, Krishna, and his devotees. So one will start remembering how the devotees were feeling towards Krishna, Sita feeling separation from Ram in the forest, being captured by Ravana. And one will start feeling these different emotions, you know, here is Krishna with a small calf, and they're running towards Mother Jasoda, who has her arms outreached, and the gopis are standing in the background holding different offerings for Krishna, and Nanda Maharaj is very happy to see his son. Mother Jasoda is full of maternal affection and separation from Krishna, and the coward boys are climbing over the wall, you know, to see their friend Krishna greeting Mother Jasoda. So one will automatically, spontaneously start remembering Krishna's feelings in the different relationships in those pastimes. And then after one becomes absorbed like that and becomes purified, one will actually become attracted to a certain relationship, naturally. One will actually start feeling the same way. So in this way it comes spontaneous. If it's done artificially, it can't be done artificially, actually. If you go, Krishna's form, let me remember Krishna's form. You know, first of all, it can't be. It's just like, it's out of love. And if it's done mechanically, like a robot, there's no question of bhakti. And it just actually becomes harder and harder to do it. The heart actually becomes harder by trying to do something artificial like that. And one will actually lose his taste for chanting rather than gain it. Or even if it doesn't become, even if one doesn't lose his taste, one gets the taste from mechanical chanting and remembering Krishna's pastime, or remembering Krishna's form. The result is that the heart may not become soft. One may actually try to overpower Krishna by the dint of one's mental strength rather than surrender to Krishna and allow Krishna to actually reveal himself. So one may be stuck on the impersonal level. Actually, the stage of liberation is Nishta, Brahma-Bhuta. If one comes to the stage of Brahma-Bhuta, then he's liberated. Because if we remember Krishna's past form, then we actually go beyond the material conception of life. But that doesn't mean we've actually entered into the spiritual conception. Because even the impersonalists, they gain liberation through remembering Krishna's form. There's one devotee named Ramdas. So Ramdas, he was always chanting Ram, 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 Ram. And Raghunath Bhat Goswami, he was going to Jagannath Puri to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and accompany him was Ramdas. He used to carry the belongings of Raghunath Bhat Goswami, because Raghunath Bhat Goswami was an exalted Brahmin, and in respect to the Brahmins, he'd carry his different belongings. He would always be chanting Ram, Hari Ram, Hari Ram, Ram Ram, Hari Hari, Ram Ram Ram. Therefore, he was called Ramdas. 24 hours a day, he was chanting the name of Ram. When they got to Jagannath Puri, Raghunath Bhat Goswami met Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya embraced him very affectionately, asked about his parents, and asked, you know, he had a very affectionate relationship. Sometime later, Ramdas came to visit Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya gave him no particular attention or respect. So why was that? Although he was constantly chanting the name of Ram, because he thought he was Ram, or he'd become Ram by chanting it, Lord Chaitanya didn't give him any special attention. So similarly, trying to force remembrance of Krishna, trying to force our way into the spiritual platform by the dint of our mental power, may get us to a certain extent, however much mental power we have, by dint of austerities or just by practicing that. But it won't necessarily get us love of God. But love of God can be had immediately if we simply ask for it. The problem is we're so busy trying to do other things, like trying to remember, you know, force our way into the spiritual platform or get free from our miseries or this or that. We forget all we're trying to really do is ask Krishna to engage us in his loving service for us to develop actually some feeling of love towards Krishna. So we simply ask for that, then Krishna will give us everything. That's all we really want. Or even if we want a little bit, then Krishna will also give us the intelligence how to get a little bit. And if we want a little bit more, then he'll give us that intelligence how to develop a little bit more love for Krishna. And that love for Krishna will be revealed as we gradually chant in the proper mood, and that gradually the form, quality, and pastimes and feelings of the residents of Vrindavan, our own personal mood towards Krishna, is revealed to us as we're chanting.
Yes.
That force is all right, but we should try to focus our attention, but then we should try to give our love. We shouldn't stop at just trying to focus our attention. Just like during kirtan, I can see many times my mind is wandering here and there, and I'm thinking, I'm looking at the deities, and they don't seem to be disturbed by my mind wandering. They seem to be pretty happy with what they're doing. Then I realize, well, I'm actually supposed to be doing something for Krishna here. So now I'm supposed to chant in here, and then I hear the chant, the kirtan leader. So then I'll stop thinking about so many things, and I'll try and hear them chanting. And then my mind will say, well, you don't really like that person anyhow. Why are you bothering listening to them? Don't you know who they are? They can't actually be chanting out of love, because they're actually envious, and they're after false prestige. They think they have a good voice, and they did this to you 3 years ago, and how can you ever forgive them? So then there's another fight with the mind to actually accept the fact that this person could actually be a devotee chanting Hare Krishna, and we should actually listen to them. So one can actually accept that I should actually be listening to this person. They're actually, what they're doing is pleasing to Krishna. And if I try to appreciate how they're trying to please Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna and try to remember Krishna or feel Krishna's presence when they're chanting, you know, this takes us to another stage of chanting. So this is one good advantage of respecting the devotees. It becomes much more easy to hear what they're saying or hear what they're chanting. Otherwise, our mind will speculate. It's always speculating in millions of different ways. And therefore, we can't enter into the subtlety, what to speak of in the gross aspect of hearing and chanting. There's one thing of just paying attention, and then there's the subtlety of appreciation. So that appreciation comes first through respect, at least coming to the neutral level, of understanding that this person is also a devotee of Krishna. And then offering some respect and some appreciation. And as that appreciation develops, then Krishna reveals himself more and more. That helps. If we appreciate others chanting to Krishna, then we'll also get some inspiration how we can chant better too. If we think we're the only ones who are chanting and everyone else is doing something else, it's very hard to learn from those who can chant nicer than we are. And if we think everyone else is chanting very nicely, I should listen very carefully how they're chanting, then Krishna will automatically give us intelligence how to chant better. Because as Krishna reveals himself, that's how we chant better also. When we actually feel Krishna's presence and the love that Krishna and his devotees have for each other, then we can develop the same loving feeling also. Loving feelings don't originate from within us. Ultimately, they originate from when we become aware of how Krishna and his devotees love each other. When we appreciate that, then our loving feelings awaken. And if we think, no one has any loving feelings, then we can't really learn to love, because we don't think love really exists. The only love that we'll know is the love between ourselves. Between myself and myself, the love that I have for myself, which is quite limited. Anything else? Yes. Yeah, nishta. When one chants Hare Krishna and spontaneously remembers Krishna's form, that's the Brahma Bhuta stage. Brahma-bhuta means that one has actually come to the spiritual platform. Yes?
When you talk in this context about remembering Krishna's form, do you mean like remembering what Krishna's form is like from the scriptures in Shastra, or actually like seeing what Krishna's
form is? No, remembering the form of the deity, remembering the descriptions in the Shastra. One time one devotee, who's a painter, Pushkarpuru, he was showing Prabhupada different paintings of Krishna from the artists. So he was showing this painting by Jadarani, this painting by Bhadraj. And then finally at the end, he said, which one looks most like Krishna? And Prabhupada said, they all look like Krishna. And then the next day, just to find out, to see, he brought in paintings from the Gurukul, pictures that the Gurukul had drawn. Krishna's stick figure with a flute and the peacock feather. And he asked Prabhupada, which one looks most like Krishna? Prabhupada said, they all look like Krishna. He said, here's the flute, here's the peacock feather, here's the, Kastuba jewel. So for a devotee, these are anything that helps him remember Krishna, that's Krishna. Even when Krishna expands himself in the Rasa Leela, or in 16,108 different forms, he expands himself slightly different just to please each queen. So it's not exactly photo, image of Krishna. Krishna has certain qualities that are revealed. He has unlimited qualities, and he reveals special qualities to each devotee. So when we remember Krishna, each form of Krishna, there's a special form of Krishna. If we become attracted, it invokes our love. That's the perfection. So Krishna has a certain form. He has a peacock feather. He has a flute. These are authorized by the scriptures, what Krishna looks like. So we shouldn't imagine that, Krishna holds, a violin instead of a flute. No, the authorized form of Krishna has a flute. He has a peacock feather. He doesn't have an ostrich feather. It's a peacock feather. So if we remember this is the authorized meditation. If we're doing that, then it's, this is the proper meditation. There are seven different forms of the deities, I believe. The form made out of metal, the form made out of jewels, the form painted on the sand, the form made out of paint. And also there's a form within the form, wood. But there's also the form within the mind. So that form, we can tell if it's the proper form, if it's made according to the Shastra. So if we're meditating that way, with the proper mood, just like Kamsa, he was always thinking of Krishna also. He was on a platform where he was thinking of Krishna's form 24 hours a day. So much so, then Prasuti and Suti, his two wives, came before him. He immediately took out his sword to kill them. Because when they came before him, he saw them as Krishna and Balaram. And they said, wait a second, Kamsa, we're your wives. Why are you going to kill us? He said, oh, I'm sorry. And he put his sword away. He said, I thought you were Krishna and Balaram. So he was in such a perfectional level, he could always remember Krishna's form. But he had his feeling was out of fear and anger towards fear of Krishna. So he got liberation when Krishna killed him because he had perfected his meditation on Krishna. But we ourselves, we can remember Krishna's form, but we're trying to develop bhakti, love for Krishna, rather than fear or other types of emotions. There is the namabhas, which I didn't go over when we were chanting. There's namaparad, there's namabhas, and shudanam. So namaparad is the chanting of the Mayavadis who are contaminated with the Mayavadi philosophy. That's called Namaparad. And Namabhas, there is Shradanamabhas, and then there is just Namabhas. So Shradanamabhas is in different things like Stoba, Sanketa, and Parihasa. Stoba is chanting out of derision. Parihasa is chanting out of jest. Sanketa, chanting out of fear. And then there is also, when the words are connected, vyadana, that one is chanting, thinking of something else. But because, what's that? Vyavadana. Thinking of something else. Oh, that's when the names are, that's separate, that they're not separate. Vyavadana is when they're actually separated, the syllables. So that doesn't really give one liberation. Anyhow, there are different types of namabhas. And if one namabhas is compared to just like when the sun is shining in the sky, then the clouds sometimes cover the sun. So one can't actually experience the shining of the sun. But some sunlight may come through. Namaparad means that the sun is shining, but the clouds are so thick that no sunlight comes through. The mist of ignorance and the clouds of anartha. But namabhas means some comes through and gradually the sun rays dissipate the mist of ignorance and the clouds of anartha, and then one becomes purified and comes to the state of shudanam, when there are no clouds of ignorance and mist of ignorance and clouds of anartha. One can chant the name purely. And from there's bhavanam and premnam. Well, the devotees are actually Krishna, none different from Krishna. So serving the devotees also in Krishna consciousness means to serve Krishna. If we serve Krishna's devotees in Krishna consciousness, then this is how we actually love Krishna. that's the second class platform we're trying to come to. Do not, just as Krishna, we worship Krishna in the temple, when we come into the temple room, we bow down because Krishna is present here in the form of the deity. But Krishna is also present in the form of the Supersoul in everyone's heart. So one who worships Krishna as the Supersoul in everyone's heart and respects everyone, every being as the temple of Vishnu, then he can also learn to, this is a higher platform of worship. Otherwise, if one worships Krishna in the temple and he neglects Krishna in the heart of all living entities, then it's said that his worship of Krishna in the temple is a waste of time. So if the devotees are pleased, that's how we make spiritual advancement. Just like if Krishna is pleased, that's how we make spiritual advancement. So if we please Krishna without any expectation of return, or please the devotees without any expectation of return, only try to please them, then the result is that we make spiritual advancement. It's our fruit of mentality that blocks our spiritual advancement. Because material world means whatever we do, we desire something, and that desire covers us, covers our consciousness. And therefore, whether the person's pleased or not pleased, doesn't make it, you know, it may not make any difference because our desire is actually what determines what the result will be. But in spiritual life, when we're actually working to please the devotees, then that desire to please the devotees is a transcendental desire, and then we can actually become purified, and when we become pleased by feeling their pleasure, then we make spiritual advancement. So, if we're happy to see the devotees happy, then we become spiritually advanced. Anything else? Yes. One more.
Is there also a technical term for interrupted devotion?
Yeah, that's anishtata bhajana kriya. That's what we were going over when we went over mayi, utsaha mayi, ganatarala. All those different things are all interrupted devotional service. Yeah. And also, anartha nivritti, this interruption, although people may not notice when we're in maya, subtly, but it's also an interruption to our service to Krishna. Service to Krishna means to become conscious of Krishna with the idea of trying to please Him. So as soon as we forget Krishna, or even if we remember Him, if we're not sincerely trying to please Him, that's also an interruption in our devotional service. So it may be a very obvious interruption, or it may be more subtle. So I think I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Madhuri Kandambini ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande. Gananjananda sya gananjana salakaya chaksur militam yena tasmai shri gurve namaha shri chaitanya mano vishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadam aham didati svapadantikam. Today we're going to go over the first page in the notes that I gave, the essence of the Madhurya Kandambini. So if you don't have one, maybe you can look on to it with someone else. So this explains that this is at the very end of the Madhurya Kandambini. And it's a little bit esoteric. Here it says, Ahankar has two functions. Ahanta, consciousness of I, and Mamata, consciousness of mind. By gyan, these two are destroyed and liberation is obtained. Bondage results by directing these two towards body, house, and such. I am this body and this is my house. So this is quite simple, called I and mine. I am this body and everything which is in relationship to this body is mine. Now the other side is, I am the follower of the Lord. I am the servant of the Lord. My Lord, a great ocean of beauty, virtue, and madhurya, along with his associates, is to be served by me. Identifying oneself in this way as the Lord's servant, Ahanta, and making the Lord and his associates the object of one's affection, or mamata, is called prema. This prema is far beyond both bondage and liberation, and is declared the crown jewel of all human goals, purushartha chodamani. Now, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur will explain about the sequence. And he says, Shraddha. When the materialistic aspect of ahanta and mamata is extremely thick, one thinks, I shall remain in worldly affairs, but I shall become a Vaishnav and serve the Lord. When by good fortune this tiny particle of faith is born, a slight trace, ganda actually means smell, of the spiritual aspect arises, and the jiva becomes fit for devotional service. Bhaktavadikara. So this is Shraddha. One identifies himself very closely with the body, but has some aspiration to become Krishna's servant. And then sadhusanga. At the stage of sadhusanga, the spiritual trace becomes a little more condensed, while the material aspect is still absolute. Adyantiki. And then at the state of anishtata, bhajana kriya, the spiritualization of I and mine is partial. Eka, desha, vyapini, while the material aspect is in full, purna. In other words, even at the stage of anishtata, bhajana kriya, which is, I imagine most of us can identify ourselves as being trying to come to this stage, then we have a little identity in relation to Krishna. A little understanding that I am Krishna's servant and Krishna belongs to me, but our material identification is quite strong. We identify ourselves with this body, and the things that are in relation to this body, we still have some feeling that they actually belong to me. And at the stage of nishta, spiritualization becomes more pervasive. Bahu desha vyapini, and the material influence is almost full. Prayatiki. So even at the stage of nishta, which we'll come to today, where one is constantly engaged in Krishna's service, and practically speaking, there's no distraction, there's no attachment. Even at that stage, where one is practically liberated from this identification with this body, the spiritualization of I am I is more pervasive. That is, from my understanding, this is not that clear, is that in more daily activities, more different aspects, one identifies himself as Krishna's servant, and he identifies more things as belonging to Krishna. As we probably notice, that at times when we're hearing or chanting or trying to remember Krishna, then we're more Krishna conscious. But under other circumstances, we may be less Krishna conscious. So it is a question of not only for some time being Krishna conscious, but being steadily Krishna conscious under all circumstances. So nishta, when one is practically under all circumstances somewhat remembering Krishna, still the material influence is almost full. So if we're feeling that the material influence is still quite full, that I still become affected by the modes of material nature, how is this possible? I've been executing devotional service for so long, don't feel very bad. Because even fairly advanced devotees, they still identify themselves with their body to some extent. At the stage of ruchi, where one is actually enjoying Krishna consciousness, then spiritualization of I and mine is nearly complete. Prayiki, while the materialistic aspect of I and mine is still pervasive. So even at the stage of ruchi, where one practically identifies himself as being a spiritual soul and has direct spiritual experiences constantly, still even at that stage, he's still identifying himself with his body. He still has bodily consciousness, at least. And the state of asakti, the spiritual aspect of ahanta mamata is complete, and the material aspect becomes partial. So at the stage when one is constantly remembering Krishna's pastimes, and sees everything in relation to Krishna, that he only identifies himself as Krishna's servant, and everything he identifies as being belonging to Krishna, even at that stage, the material aspect is still present, but only partially. Maya is strong. And at the state of bhava, when one is experiencing direct transcendental emotions constantly, the spiritual aspect becomes absolute, adhyantiki, and the material aspect is reduced to an empty shadow. So if you want to feel that you're free from maya, then the best thing to do is to come to the bhava stage. So there, it's just like a shadow, it's just like a dream. As we awaken from a dream at night, we may remember the dream, but we don't take it very seriously. Although, if it was a disturbing dream, it may affect us a little bit, but not the same way as if we were actually dreaming or identifying ourselves with a dream. In the state of prema, the spiritual aspect becomes extremely thick, paramat, yantiki, and the material aspect is completely absent. So at the state, that's why prema is the beginning of spiritual life, of actual, full spiritual life is a prema, and from there one progresses onward in one's particular relationship with Krishna. And here is another way of looking at it. It explains, in a similar manner, at the beginning of bhajana kriya, meditation of the Lord is momentary and mixed with mundane topics. During nishtha meditation, there is only a trace of abhyas of other topics. So compare that to the fact that at nishtha, the material spiritualization spiritualization becomes more pervasive and the material influence is almost full. So although at the stage of nishtha, one can actually meditate upon Krishna. That means just like as a matter of exercise, you can see Krishna. One of my favorite meditations is to visualize Krishna sitting by the bank of the Jamuna. And there is Krishna. He's sewing a kadamba flower garland. And his yellow dhoti is there. And the kadamba flower garland, which is yellow, is on his yellow dhoti, which is spread out underneath a kalpa vriksha tree. On top of the kalpa vriksha tree, there is one peacock, which is spreading its wings. Well, actually, it's not spreading its wings. And the river Jamuna is flowing nearby the tree, with full of lotus flowers, pinkish lotus flowers. And in the background, there is one white swan swimming on the river Jamuna. And in the other side of Krishna, at least in the picture side, on the right-hand side, there's Srimati Radharani, and she has a white sari on. And she's right next to a rose bush, and she has one rose flower in her hand, which is turned upside down. She's holding her sari with her left hand, and in her right hand she has the rose, and she's has pinkish and bluish and yellowish flowers in her hair. And she's just coming from the forest path, which is full of kalpa vriksha trees. And there the caption, which is in the Nectar of Devotion, is that Krishna is glancing very affectionately upon Srimati Radharani. So one can meditate upon this. In other words, to actually visualize this within our heart, this is meditation. So at the state of nishtha, then one can see this clearly, and Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, or other things don't pop into view. Just simply that picture, or whatever picture it is, one can actually think like that. But still, it doesn't mean that we don't identify ourselves with the body anymore. Because in the state when one is meditating in Krishna consciousness, then that identification with the body may slacken slightly. One may actually realize that I'm actually the consciousness within the body. But still, even at the state of nishtha, one can see that constantly, still there's some identification of the body. One is walking around in a body. And at the stage of ruchi, there is no distraction, and meditation is long-lasting. So at the stage of ruchi, one chants Hare Krishna is actually pleasureful. Because as soon as one chants Hare Krishna, one can actually feel Krishna's presence. Or if one chants the name of Krishna, he can feel the blackish presence of Krishna. If one chants the name of Ram, he can feel the whitish presence. Or the name of, or maybe greenish presence. One can smell the lotus flower in one's meditation. Everything becomes, about Krishna becomes pleasurable. I mean, one time I was having, this was in 1968. Somehow or another, my experiences back then were more Krishna conscious than they are now. But I remember one time I was having a tough day and I was praying to Krishna, you know, all I'm doing is suffering, you know, maybe it can give me one day where I'm not suffering so much. So then the next day I was taking a shower and suddenly the water was just like nectar. And the whole bathroom was just like Vaikuntha. And I was thinking, wow, this is pretty good. And I was thinking, well, I guess it won't last very long, but at least it may be one part of a day when Krishna is doing like that. I had a lot of experiences like that in the beginning. I remember for a while there, I was chanting Hare Krishna. Every time I chant Hare Krishna, I'd actually feel Krishna's presence. So I was thinking, because I wasn't that crazy, but I was thinking that, wow, I'm completely in Maya. So this is not, obviously it's not going to last forever. Because my actual state of consciousness is not actually in line with the state of consciousness that you're supposed to have these experiences. So I said, well, anyhow, you might as well take whatever mercy Krishna has. So that lasted for a long time, actually. Anyhow, it was quite an interesting year. So, and then I remember one time I was complaining to Lord Jagannath that, because I thought I should, you know, if he took me this far, he might as well take me all the way. And I was getting impatient. So I was like, I started to ask Lord Jagannath, you know, what's wrong? Anyhow, I got the idea from Lord Jagannath that I better be a little bit more patient. So then at the stage of Ruchi, there's no distraction. Meditation is long lasting. At the stage of Asakti, meditation is very deep. So, that at the stage of Asakti, because the meditation is constant, and one can actually feel like he's actually present where, in the subject matter that he's meditating on. Very deep means that he's here, but actually when he looks into his heart, he's also there. It's not that he's just seeing something, but he's actually experiencing it fully. And it's not just a picture, it's just as real, or if not more real, than what we're experiencing now. And at the stage of bhava, one's meditation, he sees the Lord in his heart, svaruti. So it's at the stage of bhava one actually begins to feel his actual identity. And he actually starts feeling the emotions of the persons that he's meditating on. He can feel, of course, it's all positive, it's all transcendental bliss, but everyone has a particular mood of love in relationship to Krishna, and one actually starts feeling that particular mood. And then his actual enthusiasm to serve Krishna is beginning to be felt in reality. Now, when we're engaged in some activity, the actual feeling coming from ourselves may not be very strong. If we get some reciprocation from Krishna and feel some transcendental pleasure, that awakens our feeling a little bit. But in the state of bhava, the feeling actually comes from oneself, spontaneously. In other words, we don't even need reciprocation from the Lord to have the feeling. The feeling comes, that's our natural feeling. So that's life. That's our actual life. Right now we're kind of asleep. So we're not really aware of the fact that we're not really feeling. That's why everyone wants to feel. Everyone wants some experience. Because practically speaking, we're just experiencing the shadow of our real selves right now. Not much of experience. And at the stage of prema, there's not only spiruti, but direct association with the Lord. So at the stage of bhava, when one's feelings become so intense, then Krishna himself personally comes to the devotee. Because Krishna actually becomes attracted to the actual feeling. There in the Nectar of Devotion explains that it's just like from the heart of the soul at this particular time, there's a diffusion of love of God which is more brilliant than the sun. At that stage, one is actually above the modes of material nature, and there's not the least affection by the material energy. And Krishna himself becomes attracted to the devotee. So there are six qualities of pure devotional service. At the stage of sadhana bhakti, we mention that it's the beginning of auspiciousness, known as subhada or shubhada, and it is kleshagi. It is the frees one from all sinful reactions, from all miseries. And at the stage of Bhava Bhakti, there's quite a jump actually from Sadhana Bhakti to Bhava Bhakti, but at the stage of Bhava has two qualities, which I always get mixed up. But one of them is the, well, those who are in Bhava Bhakti decry even the concept of liberation. The state of prema has two qualities. It gives one all transcendental pleasure, and it's the only means to attract Krishna. And there's one more quality for Bhava Bhakti. Does anyone remember what it is? Yeah. Yeah, maybe we can just, do you remember what the other? There's one, it's the, those who are in Bhava Bhakti decry even the concept of liberation. So prema bhakti has two qualities. It gives one all transcendental pleasure, and it's the only means to attract Krishna. Anyhow, these are Krishna Karshakis here. So here at the stage of prema, it gives one all transcendental pleasure, and Krishna becomes attracted to the devotee. Any questions? What was your question? But yeah, he's still in the body. Because he sees the body as belonging to Krishna. Therefore, he maintains it better than if he didn't see it belonging to Krishna. Just like we maintain our car, but we don't think we're the car. But because we think it's Krishna's car, therefore we try and take care of it nicely. So at the stage of bhava and prema, if one is engaged in Krishna's service, he takes care of it because it belongs to Krishna. Just like we generally feel separated from the car. But actually the body doesn't run by very much effort on our part. As a matter of fact, we don't do anything in relation to the body. We just desire. So when one desires only Krishna, that includes the body also, and Krishna takes care of everything else. It becomes much easier. Now because we're desiring this body, we're being affected by the three modes of material nature, and the two lower modes make life very difficult for us. But if one gets free from the two lower modes, everything becomes spontaneous. And Krishna more or less takes charge, and everything becomes quite easy. One realizes his only business is desiring. Now our desires are more or less a reflection. We're desiring in terms of our thinking, feeling, willing of this mechanical material body. But at the stage of bhava and prema, the desire from the soul comes spontaneously, automatically.
And there is no kind of proprioception at all of things you have for things one has for. There is no kind of proprioception that something belongs to you.
No. Just like if you remember a dream you had it last night, do you take it very seriously?
Yes, sometimes.
Well, there may be some identification with it, but just like if you owned a big house last night. So similarly, one who's in the bhava or the prema stage, or at least the bhava stage, he recognizes he has a body, but he doesn't take it so seriously. Although he may have some relationship to it. He sees some relationship, but it's more or less like a shadow. Just like we have a shadow. We notice we have a shadow, but we don't really think it's that important. Hard to imagine. Well, that's why we're here. We want to find out what it's like. Well, actually, this summary we have is not really the...
No, it's something I happened to see that on the other day.
Oh,
on the next page. The same list is there, except that there's also an Arjuna.
Yeah, but here in this particular summary, there's no... there's actually a Bhajana Kriya. There's two stages of Bhajana Kriya, namely Anishnata Bhajana Kriya and Nishta Bhajana Kriya. So in between that there's Anarta Nivritti. So Anarta Nivritti is more or less the process, or which is chanting the holy name, for instance, by which we go from unsteady devotional service to steady devotional service.
But it's not necessarily a separate point. You can arrange it under Bhajana Kriya also.
Well, somehow or another, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur didn't put a space in there for Anarta Nivritti. But we can imagine it somewhere in between there. Anything else? Yes. Well, we never purify ourselves. Krishna is the purifying agent. Bliss, knowledge, and eternality. How? He, Tesham eva nukamparata aham agyana jantamaha nasham yam yatmabhavashto jnana dipena bhashvata. I dwelling within the heart, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So practically what it means, I mean in one sense, is that Krishna, who is in charge of all remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness, he reveals himself. He appears within our heart in the form of remembrance. Or he may appear on the outside. Because also that's Krishna too. So basically the purifying agent is Ladini Shakti, the bliss potency, or Chit Shakti, which has Ladini and Samvit. So Krishna imbues these potencies just like the sun diffuses heat and light. So from Krishna, he diffuses these energies into the heart of the soul. And one can feel Krishna's presence. On the other, so that energy, as Krishna says, yatai dam si, samrido ganir, basmat sat kuru te arjuna, ganagni sarvakarmani, basmat sat kuru te tata. As the blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, so does the fire of transcendental knowledge burn to ashes all the accumulated results of our previous activities. So as we become more conscious of Krishna, then our material coverings are dissipated. The two coverings of Maya known as Avaratnika Shakti and Prakapnika Shakti, they're both diminished. Avaratnika Shakti is the form of lust which covers our consciousness, and Prakapnika Shakti is the form of lust which pushes us to perform materialistic activities. It will come again. No, that's not full knowledge. Therefore, the Prachetas pray, Yat pada pankaja palasa vilasya bhakta grayasrayam grahitam ukratayanti shanta tavanarakta matayo yatayo piruda shutoganas tamarunam bhaja vasudeva. Their advice is just worship Vasudeva, Krishna. Because even the great yogis and the jnanis who stop materialistic activities by force, they also get the what's called the vrittis which pass through the mind. Vrittis are just like waves that pass through the heart. And they, even sometimes they become affected by it and they fall down from their meditation. But the devotees who meditate upon the lotus feet of Krishna, upon Krishna's name, form, quality, and pastimes, who take shelter of Krishna, then Krishna pierces the heart of all the bad qualities, of all the different materialistic qualities, and one becomes established in loving Krishna. So the idea is, if we find some bad quality, just to try not to have the bad quality, or even to try and have a good quality, there's no guarantee that the good quality will stay and the bad quality won't come back. The only guarantee is that when we become Krishna conscious, then automatically all the good qualities follow, all the bad qualities become diminished, and we get love for Krishna. So just to try and restrain ourselves from the bad qualities is probably guaranteed that we'll eventually fall victim to them. But to become Krishna conscious, actually aware of Krishna as the solution to take care of shelter of Krishna, that means that if Krishna sees our sincerity and reveals himself, then we'll forget about all the good or bad qualities. We'll just remember Krishna. No, it's much easier. But it, because of the higher taste, therefore, if we actually get over some of the lower states, then we'll actually realize how devotional service at every stage, but especially when we come up to a higher stage, like if one can come to Ruchi, it's automatic. In other words, there's no difficulty. If all day long, if you had an unlimited appetite and unlimited power to eat, and all day long you could eat all different varieties of delicious food, there'd be no problem doing it. So the state of Ruchi, where everything that you're doing in devotional service becomes pleasurable and ever increasingly more pleasurable and wonderful, then there's no problem. At the stage of Nishta, what's that? Yeah, the stage of Nishta, where one is more or less becoming free from the lower qualities. the four qualities mentioned at the state of Nishta that one is free from, namely laya, the tendency to sleep during kirtan, or beginning increasing order, during kirtan, during hearing, shravanam, and during smaranam. So this is a tendency of increasing. So when one is actually awake, even when one is meditating upon Krishna, and the next one is called vikshepa, distraction. In the same way, increasingly in the order of kirtanam, shravanam, and smaranam. The next one is called rasosavat, the taste for material enjoyment, and dukkavat, lower qualities. So the state of nishta, one is more or less free from these lower qualities, and one is quite attentive. Oh, there's also a prapati. In the absence of laya and vikshepa, one is still attentive in Krishna consciousness. A prapati means indifference. That although I'm not distracted, although I'm not sleeping, still I'm not very enthusiastic to either hear or chant or remember Krishna. So that stage requires effort. But seemingly requires effort. But the reward is, at the stage of nishta, is that one becomes free from all material misery. And since it says here meditation upon the Lord is only a trace of other topics, so one actually gets some experience of Krishna. The mind becomes more steady. But it requires effort. But the meditation, the understanding, everything is increasingly growing. That actually the only thing worthwhile thinking about is Krishna, and that I should do it during Shravanam, Kirtanam, and Smaranam, and that there's no need to be distracted by other topics. So more or less, one becomes free from fear and anxiety and all these other things as a reward. He's coming to the state of liberation. At the stage of nishtata, anishtata bhajana kriya, or anartha nivritti, but when it's trying to get free from the anarthas, then it's quite an endeavor. First of all, we have to find out what the anarthas are. And we have to, the real effort at that particular stage is chanting the holy name without offense. Is learning how to actually chant attentively and try to put some feeling into it. And also during the day, follow, more or less do our service without offense and follow the regulations for about seva aparat, worshipping the deities. And the state of Bhajana Kriya, there's only difficulty. That's all there is difficulty. It's an austerity. You know, at the state, first one is Utsahamayi, and then Gana Tarala, Viyuta Vikalpa, Vishaya Sangara, Niyama Akshama, and Taranga Rangini. There are different stages of problems. But one is actually becoming aware of the fact that Krishna is the center and that the activities are actually supposed to be centered on Krishna. But still, there's so much material attachment and identification that, practically speaking, it seems one is faced with his previous karma and the struggle of identifying with a body and a mind and all the problems that come with that. The problem is not from devotional service. The problem comes from having a body and a mind and identifying with it, whatever karma we have. Still identifying with our previous Prarabdha karma. So devotional service is never the problem. The problem is our material identification. But we may think devotional service is the problem sometimes. So the next stage. Oh, actually, one more thing I want to go over here, which is also on here. So this is the last page. This is about anartha nivritti. This gives you the Sanskrit names for those who want to learn some Sanskrit. And the anarthas arising from previous sinful activities fall in the category of the five types of kleshas previously mentioned. So the five types of kleshas previously mentioned are avidya and asmita, identification with the body of false ego, raga, dvesha, attachment and aversion, and abhinivesha, the fear that arises from death, anxiety. Anarthas arising from previous pious activities are the attainment of the results of pious activities, different types of sense enjoyment. Anarthas arising from the offenses refer to those arising from the namaparads and sevaparads. Anarthas arising from devotional service refer to acquiring wealth, distinction, fame, etc., by rendering devotional service. So that was already identified as Taranga Rangini, known as Lava, Pratishta, and Puja. And the other ones, such as Nisidachar, Kutinati, and what's the other one? Nisidachar. What's that? Jivahimsa. Right. Thank you. So these things appear to actually be identified with our previous sinful activities. So there are four types of anarthas can be eradicated. The four types of anarthas can be eradicated in five ways. This we were going over when we were going over the different stages, but here it'll be applied to the different types of anarthas. So ekadesha vartini, limited or partial. I think this requires some imagination on our part to understand it. Bahubdesha vartini, pervasive. And prayiki, almost complete. Purna, complete. And atyantiki, absolute. Basically what this means, as it says here, the nullification of anarthas arising from aparadas as follows. We'll see that this is the one that's most, this means namaparada especially. This is the one that's explained most fully. From the start of devotional service, Bhajana Kriya, nullification is partial. That is ekadesha vartini. So when we're engaged in devotional service at the beginning, just trying to become steady in devotional service, trying to give up, you know, not to emphasize renunciation or sense gratification, just trying to do our duty more or less, trying to become satisfied just by being a devotee, coming to the programs, having a regular sadhana, trying to become steady in the sadhana, then the offenses against the holy name are limited. In other words, generally we work on one anartha at a time, one little thing. We find something's wrong with us, some obstacle or impediment, and we're trying to get rid of it. We're chanting the holy name and praying for it, and see we see some improvement. And we think, wow, I'm practically pure devoted. And then we suddenly, this other thing arises, other anartha tendency, and we think, wow, when does this end? I can be here since, you know, time immemorial from now, and I'll still have some, you know, another anartha is going to appear. So this is such as a state of Bhajana Kriya. We're just working a little bit on our bad habits or bad tendencies, or even good tendencies, and trying to remain fixed in Krishna consciousness. And then with the appearance of nishta, eradication is more pervasive. So the potency of the holy name, when we chant it at the state of nishta, means that we make much more rapid progress than at the stage of Vajna Kriya. That is the stage of nishta, when one is chanting, one is actually feeling oneself becoming elevated in consciousness and forgetting about material existence and all one's identification with it much more extensively. And with the appearance of Ratya Bhava, the eradication is almost complete. So almost complete means that every time we chant Hare Krishna, we are in a different state of a different world, actually. The material world or material ideas, material consciousness practically ceases as we're engaged in devotional service. And there's no question of improvement because there's nothing to improve anymore. One doesn't identify with his body. His body is more or less working according to Krishna's desire. Therefore, he doesn't think there's anything to improve because they think Krishna does everything perfectly. And the appearance of prema, the eradication is complete. So at that stage, there's no more bodily identification. He's simply in love with Krishna, and he's in the spiritual world, and his relationship with Krishna, that's what he's doing. And the attainment of the laws of association, the eradication of anarthas is absolute, no possibility of their reappearance. So at that stage, he's actually not in the material world anymore. Then we can compare it with the eradication of anarthas arising from past sin. With the performance of Bhajana Kriya, the eradication is almost complete. So that's why the devotees, we can chant Hare Krishna for a little while and practically feel that we're devotees. That's who we are. And our past tendencies like smoking or other types of things, practically, even at the stage of Bhajana Kriya, the devotee is not very much attracted to those things. So devotees can follow the principles. And even at the stage of Bhajana Kriya, not be affected so much. In other words, if we actually follow the sadhana, then that tendency to the four sinful activities, it's not actually that strong, for the most part, if one is serious about sadhana. Therefore, when the devotees say they have problems, the best thing to do is just engage in sadhana bhakti. Even, for instance, some of our leaders, Harikesh Prabhu, just to bring up one name, although he was well appreciated for his management and for his encouragement of book distribution, etc., unfortunately, he didn't have a sadhana, a very good sadhana himself. He didn't come from Mangalarti for many, many years, like 15, 20 years. And he'd come just to see the deities. He didn't come to class usually unless he gave class. He got more and more service, and his rounds weren't so well chanted. He didn't have very much time to read Prabhupada's books. So although he was engaged in devotional service in some ways, but he didn't have a very strong sadhana. Therefore, the tendency for past sinful activity, for the tendency for one's past karma to arise increased instead of decreasing. And with the appearance of nishtha, eradication is complete. So if one becomes steady and engaged in Krishna service, then practically speaking, the influence of past sinful activities or pious activities becomes zero. With the appearance of sakti is absolute. So it's not our previous sins that are really giving us problems. What's really giving us problems is the fact that we're not so much desirous of executing devotional service. There's a difference between the problems that we're faced and the inspiration to perform devotional service. That even people in the material world with no problems whatsoever, they're not necessarily inspired to perform devotional service. And even people with great problems, seemingly great problems, if they're inspired to perform devotional service, they don't have any problem. Then it says, with the eradication of anarthas arising from bhakti is as follows. With Bhajana Kriya, the eradication is partial. With the appearance of nishtha, it is complete. And with the appearance of ruchi, is absolute. So once one gets a taste for the service itself, then whatever amenities you get from the service, which is nothing, really hardly anything, then that practically goes away very easily. Even if one can get material opulence or praise, but these things are just like, it's just part of a shadow. But when one actually gets bhakti, with their taste for devotional service, then these things don't seem very significant. Because everyone is actually just looking for taste, ultimately. Ultimately, what we're actually looking for is the Lord's association. And if we get that, everything else is perfect. The rest of our lives will become perfect. Any questions about this? So this is an Artha Nivritti? Yes. Well, that was one devotee who's praying that my Madhavendra Puri, that I don't care about this and that, I don't care about my ancestors, or I don't care about the demigods, I don't care about bathing at this, but this is not really Bhajan, this is not the sadhana that we're performing. Sadhana, which is helping us remember Krishna. Those were the ritualistic performances of the Vedic rites, such as bathing in sacred places and etc. Aho bata swapacho to garyan jivagre vartate namatu vyam tapustapes juhuvu sarshna arya ramanuchara namagrinanti ete. Even how wonderful it is that even a swapacha, one who eats, cooks dogs, swapakacha, that even he, because he's chanting the holy name, it's be understood that he surpassed all the rituals of the Vedas, such as performing sacrifices, or bathing in holy places, or performing the rites of brahmachari life, the regulations. But just by chanting the holy name, one acquires all these good qualities, and at the same time, he gets the love of God. Well, that's the chanting. In other words, everything we're doing is what one does at the stage of perfection. Just like in the spiritual world, the gopis, they chant Hare Krishna. Yeah. They meditate on Krishna, they do service for Krishna. So we're doing the activities of a liberated soul. They don't stop, they increase. Yeah, that's a Vaishnava. Yeah. Basically speaking, the devotee, when he engages in devotional service, then he doesn't have to perform the Vedic rites, because the Vedic rites are ultimately meant to help him come to the platform of devotional service. Doesn't mean that necessarily he gives up all the Vedic rites, just like he does them in order to help his devotional service. Just like, for instance, Prabhupada has given us vana and ashram. So even if we surpass vana and ashram, just to set the example for others, still we perform our vana and ashram. Just as a service for our spiritual master. So one's service to the spiritual master and Krishna, that never stops. So since we have this body, as long as we have the body, therefore we'll act accordingly. Either if one is not in Krishna consciousness, and he acts according to the rules and regulations of his vana and ashram. And his ultimate authority is Shastra, or his Brahmin priest. And if one identifies himself as Krishna's servant, then his authority is his spiritual master, who gives him spiritual duties to perform. And his authority is also Vedic literature, but the part that deals with devotional service to Krishna. Well, if he does, he won't be in the state of Nishtha anymore. But as it says that, practically speaking, his at the stage of Nishtha, eradication is complete, and both anartha is arising out of bhakti and arising out of past sin. At the stage of Nishtha, eradication is more pervasive. So he's still not perfectly chanting. He may become distracted sometimes from the chanting. And his love for Krishna is not really awakened yet, fully. It's just minute. He's more purified. There's a difference between purity and love for Krishna. In other words, at the state of Nishtha, his purification is almost complete, but his love for Krishna hasn't awakened very much. So at that particular stage, the tendency to commit offense is less, because that really is driven by envy and all different bad qualities, which at the state of Nishtha is practically nil. But his actual, or at least it doesn't affect one very much, but his actual awakening of awareness and love for Krishna is not that deep. So there might be some tendency to commit offense sometimes. At the state of Bhava? Oh no. At the state of Bhava, there's no tendency to commit offense, practically. Because one doesn't even identify himself with the body. It's just like a shadow. At that stage, it says, with the appearance of Ratya Bhava, the eradication is almost complete. Well, that means that the namaparads are practically diminished. Especially inattentiveness. Practically, there is no inattentiveness. One is constantly meditating. But there's a slight tendency, very slight tendency to become inattentive. The other namaparads are not very. If attentiveness is there, and one chants with bhava, with feeling, which is the state of bhava, then the other ones are not really very significant.
So there's no more envy?
No. There's nothing to be envious of, because everything is Krishna. And one is in love with Krishna at the state of bhava. So instead of enviousness, it is simply a flow of love. One is not even thinking about it, just spontaneously, ever increasingly love for everyone. Everyone gives one great delight and pleasure. So whether there's any, one just feels himself more and more a servant of everyone. Yeah, that's explained in the next part of Nishtha. That's the stage after the stage of Nishtha. Nashta Prayesh Bhavadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevya. The first part is the stage of Bhajana Kriya and Anartha Nivritti, and that's the stage of Nishtha. Shenvitam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravanam Kirtana Riddhyantak Stohya Bhujani Vidunoti Saritsitam. That's all the stage of Bhajana Kriya, Anishtata Bhajana Kriya, and Anartha Nivritti. And then Nashta Prayesh Vabhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. That's the stage of Nishta. And then Tadara Jastamo Bhava Kama Lovadayastriye. That's the stage of Ruchi. Yes. We get up, I don't think we have to worry about it. We can just get up to the stage of Ruchi. We won't have anything to worry about anymore. Even if there's some slight tendency, it's practically unnoticeable. Because at the stage of Ruchi, for instance, when one sees everything, everyone is being wonderful, at the stage of Ruchi, everything has a taste. Just like it says in the Brahma Samhita, Chit Anandam Jyoti Param Apitad Asvadyam Apicha. That all the living entities there are all enjoyable and tasty. I remember one time I was distributing books in Dallas, Texas, which wasn't my favorite place for distribution because the whole city was full of what's called rednecks. That is, people who are, as soon as they see, first time I came to Dallas, actually it was Houston, I was there with Vishnu John Maharaj and his servant Srinath. There was the three of us. And so Vishnu John Maharaj, he tried to open up a bank account. At that time, all we had was dhotis and tilak. That's all we had. No one ever thought of wearing any other clothes. So he went to all the different banks, and they refused to open a bank account for him. And then we went out and did Harinam. Immediately we were arrested and put into jail for chanting the holy name of God. And in the prison, when I was in jail, I was chanting, the guard said, you know, shut up. So I thought, he's a demon, he needs some purification. So I started to chant louder. And he became angrier and angrier, and finally he took out his gun, he was going to hit me with it. So I figured maybe it would be a good time not to chant so loudly. Anyhow, that was the type of place it was. And Dallas was considered worse at that time. But I was in Dallas, I was doing book distribution, and at first we had three or four brahmacharis going out with me, but gradually they disappeared. And Dallas, doing book distribution in Dallas wasn't my favorite place, but somehow or another I dragged myself out there. So one day I was feeling so bad I didn't want to go out, but I went out anyhow. And I wasn't a very expert book distributor, and the people weren't naturally very kind-hearted, it seemed to me. Very interested. So I went out there anyhow, and somehow or another in that day, Krishna gave me some mercy. So everyone looked like they came from Vaikuntha. They were actually effulgent and beautiful, and they all seemed like they were just like, you know, dancing down the street. And everyone who came up to me bought a magazine and had a big smile on their face. So I had 50 magazines or something like that in a very short period of time. All 50 magazines were distributed, and I was completely in ecstasy. I was thinking, well, it would be nice if this happened every day, but I don't think it is. And then I went back, and that was the last time that happened. But at the stage of Ruchi, everything is wonderful. Everyone is like seen as a very nice, you know, transcendental helper for one's devotional service. So there's not very much tendency to commit offense or to be in anxiety or anything like that. But we have to earn, we have to be patient enough to come to that stage. Does that answer your question? Yes. Initially, yeah, of course. Yeah. There's no tendency to sleep. Laya, that's ignorance. Vikshepa, distraction, is the mode of passion. And aprapati, which is the mode of goodness, the indifference towards Krishna consciousness, even when you're not sleepy or distracted, just being satisfied within oneself, that also disappears. So nishtha, you're transcendental, practically speaking, to all three modes, including goodness. There's no dukkha-vad. There's no bad qualities. There's no rasa-vad, trying to enjoy one's good situation. One is simply taking pleasure in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Yeah, Nishna. Ruchi, real devotional service begins at Ruchi. I mean, real devotional service begins at Prem. But if you want to talk about the experience of the results of devotional service, what devotional service is, you know, devotion as a steady platform, quality, that's Ruchi. Because one is, if one comes to the platform of Ruchi, everything is so nice. Everything is so pleasurable. One is constantly engaged, and one is more and more. And very quickly one comes to the platform of asakti. And bhava and prema, they just follow naturally, spontaneously, automatically. Because every time you chant Hare Krishna and feel Krishna's presence, so many anarthas are all being dissipated, so many sinful activities are being dissipated, and it's even more wonderful. And so you want to chant more. And the more you chant, the more wonderful it becomes. So very quickly, you know, and then at the stage of asakti, when you're chanting and just everything, you know, all you're seeing is Krishna and his pastimes, and all the devotees engaged in the pastimes more enthusiastically, then devotional service becomes ever more increasingly, the progress becomes more and more rapid. And then one comes to the stage of bhava where it's all completely spontaneous, and it's all coming from oneself with ever eager, more and more eagerness. One is practically not even part of the material world, but our real self takes over, then you don't even notice, you know, the advent of prema, practically speaking. Because it goes so quickly. You're not even part of the material world anymore. You're living in the spiritual world where time doesn't even make a difference. Yes. An impersonalist? Yeah, that's about as far as they can go. They come to the platform going beyond the material energy, Brahma Bhuta. But go to a level beyond them. No, most of them, Shukadeva Goswami, when his father preached to him, Vyasadeva, he didn't listen, didn't trust him. Krishna had to come and preach to him. So it's very difficult to preach to someone on that platform. The four Kumaras, they were on that platform, but when they saw Narayan and smelt his lotus feet, the Tulsi and the sandalwood pulp on his lotus feet, they become so ecstatic that they became pure devotees. Their conception changed from impersonalism to personalism.
So it's actually only Krishna's mercy that impersonalism
has changed into personalism. Or a really exalted devotee. Very difficult, I mean, for impersonalists, a real, you know, born again Brahmabhuti, you know, to become a devotee just by ordinary preaching. I think we'll stop there, actually. And tomorrow we'll go over something about Nishta, and then we'll go on to Ruchi, Asakti, and hopefully we'll have time just to read about Prema. Thank you very much. Madhuri Kandambini ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande.